the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Mississippi State Crop Podcast. Today, Bobby is behind the scenes working the camera, looking at, he's going to do a blurb on what goes on with the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about red-banded stink bugs, and just so you all know, Bobby let me control the computer, and I didn't record the first time, so this will be our second take.
Yeah,
this is take number two.
Yeah, we're halfway through this deal, and Whitney looks down, and we're not even recording. I mean, kind of lost my steam now.
You know, you've now been here over a year, so you can't use that rookie excuse anymore.
If y'all could see how many buttons is on this computer program that he's got up, I don't even know how we do any of this. I don't even know how anybody understands that stuff. There's a lot going on that computer screen recording these things, it looks like.
But I only had to press one button.
And you failed to do that a while ago. So we talked about red-banded stink bugs for 15 minutes. We realized we were not recording.
Bobby realized we were not
recording. Bobby realized we were not recording, but yeah.
Oh, he's really the expert.
Yeah,
I'm learning. I'll get there.
Yep.
If that's our biggest mistake of the day, we'll be good.
No, so we did. Look, we wanted to hit on some stuff. Today is August 6th, and we wanted to hit on some stuff on red banded stink bugs. We've been talking about red bandits for months. We caught them in a ditch banks behind a relatively warm winter. We knew there were going to be an issue. To date, they seem to have only been sort of a bigger issue around the I-20 corridor. Don't matter whether you're in the Delta or the Hills, red-banded stink bugs are a problem in both areas. But over the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 days, things are starting to really happen with red-banded stink bugs. They're in more of a larger geography now. The numbers are going up. More sprays are going out. And, Don, I don't even think we have not seen yet what's coming.
No, we're just on the front end of this. And the real big thing that's changed in the last 7 to 10 days is we're seeing a lot more reproduction. I know a guy called me. He said, I got, a few adults, but I got a bunch of egg masses out there. I said, what do you do? I'd let them hatch. That way you don't have to spray them twice.
Yeah.
And a lot of reproduction's going on. Small field just a couple of miles from Stoneville is full of nymphs. I ran into that yesterday or day before. So things are definitely changing.
Yeah, and they're going to continue to change, I think, as more beans move out of – as more beans start to mature and other beans start to come into the reproductive stages or the seed-filling stages, those stink bugs are going to start moving around, reproduction is going to pick up, and they're just going to increase, I think, through the rest of the season.
We hadn't really talked about this yet compared to 2017, and which is our benchmark that we compare everything to. And the earlier planted beans, and we had a pretty substantial amount of the crop in 17 planted in that early to mid-April window and avoided a lot of it. I don't think we're going to have quite that luxury this year because everything is later than it was.
And we talk about this with a lot of pests, and the reason that we're anticipating, and look, we're not going to say everybody's going to experience this issue, in any, I guess, severity, but what happens is, with all the pests, really, is you plant late, and particularly with red-banded stink bugs, the people that did plant early, they miss a lot of that. Their beans mature out, maybe they get them out of the field, but as there's less and less green patches, as they start kind of dwindling down, everything is moving into them, and that is a huge target for red-banded stink bugs. And I feel pretty confident that at least in some areas we're going to deal with some fairly high numbers.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be highly variable. Depends on where you're at, because we've got areas that the bulk of the beans right now are getting close to that R5 stage, and it may be that there's enough acres in the landscape that we spread them out.
Yeah.
Or we just blow up a huge number that's going to just annihilate the really late stuff.
Yeah, that's a big difference from 2017, is a lot of our beans were planted early in 2017, and that's not the case this year. They were 2 to 3, 4 weeks later when the bulk of the beans were planted.
And I hope that my planting date study will help verify some of that too, in addition to everything that's done in the past, because we have anything from V5 up until R6 beans. So hopefully with 8 planting dates, we'll see that kind of transition.
Yeah, so an example on how quick this thing can happen. My crew, we checked the OVTs, the soybean OVT trials, the official variety trials for the variety testing program. And in Noxubee County yesterday, now keep in mind, last week, we sample them every week, and last week, I think we might have caught a stink bug or two, and none of them were red bandage. Yesterday, I think we had somewhere close to 50 stink bugs and 100 sweeps, just in a 7-day period. Now, these beans are R55, but in a 7-day period, and out of those 50, 28 of them were red bands in a 7-day period. And that's how quick this thing can go. We got to stay on it because they're very damaging.
They're definitely more damaging than our native species. Therefore, you know, you've got to be more timely with them. You know, we have a tendency, or some people do, that, you know, if you have browns, greens, southern greens, that your threshold, well, I got time, I got a few days to deal with them. Or if it gets a rain and it's 8 or 10 days when you deal with them, you can't really do that with red banded because how damaging they can be.
Yeah, and back to what Angus was talking about how quick they changed. We've seen that, or at least talking to our colleagues down south in Louisiana, they've seen it happening over the last 2 to 3 weeks where their numbers have really increased. And I know on these things we talk about our colleagues in other states a lot, and that's because we talk amongst ourselves, you know, across states all the time, and it really helps us from the standpoint of we see when a problem's starting to build up. And what we're hearing in Louisiana right now is that they're starting to really deal with red banded stink bugs on a pretty big level right now, and that's something that's probably going to sweep up to us pretty quick.
So we talked about how damaging they are. Let's you know, our threshold reflects that. Let's talk about the threshold for just a minute.
So when talking about the threshold for red bandeds, they're going to be lower than the traditional stink bug complex. So 4 per 25 sweeps up until R6.5, and then it switches to 10 per 25 sweeps. And generally speaking, going to terminate about R7, but that's dependent on the environmental conditions. So if you're in a situation that's really rainy and everything is wet, you might need to monitor those beans a little bit closely for a little bit longer after that time period. If you're in a situation where it's dry, you may be able to terminate at that R7. So just really situational on the environment. The other thing with red bandeds is there's been some questions along the lines of how do you count red bandeds when you have kind of a mixed bag? So Angus or Jeff, what would you say in regards to that?
So we kind of just came up with something the other day, and I think it makes sense. We do this with clouded plant bugs and tarnished plant bugs. So we got a lot of different species of stink bugs in the field, greens, browns, southern greens, red banded. Greens, browns, southern greens, we use 9 per 25 sweeps, and we use 4 for red banded. So the red bandeds are obviously more damaging. So if you just divide 4 into 9, it comes into 2 point something. So basically they carry about 2-fold the weight. So if you have a mixed bag of stink bugs in the field, count greens, southern greens, and browns as one, but then give every red banded a 2 count, you really got a dynamic threshold that accounts for multiple pests in the same field.
You know, something I just realized, Whitney's getting better at these things, because you've always been calling Whitney out, and now she's starting to call us out.
Well,
to come up
yeah,
with
so
things.
Bobby being behind the scenes today, and she's sitting behind kind of moderating this thing, she's really taking that moderator role on. Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you.
I want to, yeah, call me out anytime.
Hey, but on that number, you're saying that we're adding up to 9, correct?
Yeah. You would use a threat. Yeah, if you got multiple species, that's very important. Yeah, good point. So if you count every red band twice and the other one's 1, you got to use the threshold of 9. That's a really good point.
If you do the math, it comes out to 2.25.
2.25. Okay.
Yeah. I had this question the other day from somebody. It says, I've got 2 fields of beans. They're both between R5 and R6. I have them in one. I don't have them in the other. I said, I'd guarantee you that the ones you don't have is something like 5.1, 5.2, you know, guessing in between that. And the other one is R5.5 or further along. He said, yep. I said, the one that got to R5 first is the one that got to stink bugs.
Yeah, stink bugs are seed feeders. They want to preferentially feed on seed. And until you start getting into the, you know, filling seed, I mean, they may be in the field and they may hit a stem or whatever, but they want to preferentially feed on seed. And that's why we see stink bugs increase 5.5 on the 5.6 always.
And that is actually true to a large extent. But we have to remember with these indeterminates, we may be at R3 at the top of the plant, but we got an R6 pod at the bottom of the plant.
Yeah, and that's what makes red bandas difficult, is they'll be down at in the bottom of that plant on those pods and laying eggs down low where they're difficult to get to.
And it probably also accounts for the difficult to get to, in other words, get in your sweep net, while you having, you know, hardly any red bands in the field at all. Then the next week you pick up 20 nymphs because you was not getting them in the sweep net.
Yeah, and I think is that fruit matures up that plant, the more you get pods and seed in the top, the easier it is to find them in the sampling.
No, absolutely. So, you know, I was telling somebody yesterday, in 2017, I had some beans planted about the third week of June inside Mississippi. And it was a pretty small block of beans. And, I mean, I have never seen red bands like that. Now, keep in mind, these are really, really late beans. But people get kind of panicky when you start talking about, hey, I might have more than two applications for a, in that year, and this is an outlier, I would say no one should expect this situation.
I have the same outlier because I know what you're talking about.
On threshold, I made seven applications to those beans on threshold, and I was using the highest rates of the best products at that time. But the whole point of that story is I don't think you can would expect this on a whole farm. I don't think you would expect that. However, it does show that if these things, when they really start coming, that there's not a lot of anything that's going to keep them out for very long.
Yeah, and on top of that, I had the same trial that you did, and even with that six, seven applications, I still have more damage than you would like as far as seed damage. And you're right, it's probably not going to be – you're not going to see this on a whole farm, but there are fields, commercial fields out there that are unbelievably late.
Yeah.
Because week before last, I saw some V3 beans.
Behind flood water?
Yes.
Yep.
Didn't you just plant some beans last week?
Yeah. But that's me. I'm not trying to make money on these either. Yeah, they're trying to come up at the moment.
We keep talking about 2017. You know what the best part about 2017 was, Whitney?
I have no idea.
I hadn't turned 50 yet.
Lord. You are old, Jeff.
Everybody tells me I don't look it, though.
Yeah, you don't. You don't.
I'm starting to feel it.
You look 49.
I can't say anything.
I was still working for Angus in 2017.
Yeah, so you were involved in them trials.
Oh, I was. Yeah, all those Sunday trips to Rolling Fork.
Yep. We learned so much about red bandits that year. And, you know, it drives these consultants crazy because you're out there basically sweeping beans that you would have walked away from in any other year. And it's tearing your nets up because you got drying down beans. But look, it's just the reality of this pest.
And the other thing that was strange, because the whole situation in 17 was a learning experience for most of us, you know, that don't work in Louisiana, or especially in South Louisiana where they almost deal with them every year, is there were reports of the elevators say, listen, don't bring any more beans full of stink bugs, because they were counting them as foreign matter.
Yeah.
So what do you think the biggest driving factor is that this year may be potentially a big red-banded stink bug year, and our last year was 2017? What kind of happened in that couple-year period that we may see them big this year?
Well, it all has to do with the winter. We had a mild winter last year. We had red-banded stink bugs the year before. We didn't spray a lot, but we sprayed some. And then we had that mild winter that allowed them to survive. They survived further north than they have in the past. But I think, you know, the thing we talked about is the soybean planting date, and everything that goes along with planting soybeans has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, we were really fortunate following the 2017 crop that we had a really harsh winter that killed them out. Because if we'd had a mild winter, I don't know how bad 18 would have been.
It'd have been an absolute disaster. And no question about it.
And I was based on 17. If we'd had a mild winter, I was going to say, my recommendation is don't plant beans after, say, June 1. I know some of the insurance programs you got to, but the amount you're going to have to spray them for red banded stink bug is just going to make it just unfeasible.
So we know that planting date is going to be our biggest advocate as far as insecticide, as Angus likes to say. Planting early is your number one insecticide in soybeans. So as we move forward and need to spray, what are our control options for red bandeds?
So I think this is a question we get all the time. And I've got a lot of tests out on red banded over the years. And I had some last year and they built up pretty big last year. We were running 25 or so per 15 sweeps in some tests. And it's hard to get this point across because a lot of this is hindsight, information when you figure this out. And Don and I have talked about this a lot. There are a lot of products that will kind of knock red banded stink bugs way back. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I could name that would do it. But when red banded, if they're not going to come right back in the field, but you don't really know if they're going to come right back in the field. But this time of year, I think we can assume that it's likely. When you start talking about reinfestation 3-4 days after treatment, that's when you really start separating products. And at least in my mind, it has to be an acephate-based program, and I don't really like it alone. I'd rather see it mixed, with a pyrethroid. And acephate bifenthrin has been one of my go-tos over the years, and the reason why it has been consistent, very consistent. There's a lot of things that will knock something back, but consistency means a lot when you're making recommendations across the whole state.
And that tends to hold new adults moving into the field back a little bit longer than other things. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I had the same test last year that we had them right there at the end. I had things that I would not use in most situations look really good, but I had one flight of them.
Yep.
So what do you do if acephate bifenthrin is our go-to option? I need to make an application in 2 weeks. That's within my 30 days of using that second application of bifenthrin. What is the next option?
That's a good question. And so I'm getting a lot of questions this year, generic Lambda. The price is extremely low, extremely low. Hey, I'm good with that as long as acephate is in that mix. It's the two together. I have no problem with going like generic Lambda. We have a 24C. I think we got 2 pounds of acephate we can use in beans because we were anticipating this problem. But, yeah, you got to keep those things in mind. And as we start moving into late applications, you got to keep pre-harvest intervals into mind as well. So there's some things you're going to have to probably mix up. But
we're very limited on the number of products we have for red banded stink bug. If we get, like you say, get backfilling with adults. Yeah. Indigo is another option. I know some folks are not real thrilled about it because of price. It tends to be pricier than some of the other ones, but it is an option. If you're if you've already made a bifenthrin application and you're within that 30-day period. We're somewhat limited.
Yeah.
On the karate, the generic Lambda, I would do, If you go that route, I would not cut that pyrethroid rate. I would go with the high rate.
Absolutely.
Using Lambda. And then the other thing we get into, I shouldn't say we get into it. I keep thinking we're about to get into it, is we're about to get to a point where we start hitting these pop-up showers and rainfall, and acephate's not going to be the best option in a lot of those situations. because it has very little rain fastest. And so some of those other products like Don was talking about are going to become very important in those situations.
And one of the things we did in 17, if y'all remember right, when we ran into the rain, and I would never do this alone, so y'all hear me, never would you do this alone. But you're allowed, so just imidacloprid. You can use an ounce and a half of imidacloprid in soybeans. So when we had hit them rain showers, it's the combination of the products that seemed to work better. Two modes of action out there at once. But we were using like 1 to 20 bifenthrin plus an ounce and a half of imidacloprid in rainy periods, and it seems to definitely have helped better than, say, the bifenthrin alone. So from a control option standpoint, I mean, that's kind of some of our go-tos. There are several things out there, but you do need to be definitely aware of the weather. But I really feel like acephate. Yeah. Hey, there's one thing I do want to definitely mention. We've got a lot of people that listen to these podcasts. Some of them are not necessarily farmers. We've got a lot of beekeepers that listen to this podcast, believe it or not. We keep bees, my family, and you know, myself. But they kind of keep up with what's going in the agricultural crops, what's going on. One of the questions, I've already had it twice in about the last 2 weeks from beekeepers, is they're concerned when they hear us talking about red banded stink bugs, because when they hear that, they hear, hey, we're fixing to spray a lot. So they're concerned, right? So if you keep in mind what we talked about earlier, when red bandeds tend to hit and when the majority of the sprays are going out, you know, R55 to R6, there's not hardly a bloom. There's no reason for a bee to be in that field.
It is rare for us to spray red bandeds with flowers in the field.
That's right. So, you know, my answer to that, if I had my own bees by a soybean field and red banded was going on hot and heavy, R5 and a half to R6, I'm not real worried about it. Now, what you might think about is direct drift, but I hope that would be your only really concern. There shouldn't be any bees in these fields at that time. But if you put your sprays your best you can, if you have bees around late in the afternoon, close to dark, that will make a really big difference. But the other thing is, I hope you don't have your hives right next to somebody's turn row where he has no choice but to spray very near him. If you do that, it's on you. I would never put my bees immediately on a turn row. I mean, that's asking for it right there. But you're not going to get there shouldn't be any danger from red bandage for the most part when it comes to bees. Bees should not be in the field.
Yeah, I mean, the beans should be well beyond flowering at that time. And
yeah.
Nothing for them bees to forage on out there.
Yeah, and talking about bees, we've done a lot of work on the impacts of pesticides on bees and measuring different levels. And now a lot of those efforts are going to be ramped up in Mississippi. We have a new pollinator center that's a joint venture between USDA, ARS, and Mississippi State. We're going to have some really good scientists here in Mississippi doing a lot of good work on bees and pollinators with that center.
Yep, and we're hoping to really work close with them from the row crop side as well.
Absolutely.
So with that, are there any final thoughts on red bandeds before we close?
For sure, be vigilant with these.
Yeah, but just be watching. I think things are going to change a lot in the next 10, 14 days.
There's no substitute for a sweep net.
Well, you have it. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you ever have any questions, feel free to call any of us, and we'll talk to you later.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.